The cause for canonization has been opened for an extraordinary American woman, Dorothy Day, from Brooklyn, New York. She was referred to by Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York as a saint for our time, a living, breathing, colorful, lovable, embracing, warm woman who exemplifies what's best in Catholic life. And to tell us more about her and where she is in this canonization process, we welcome back the editor of the award-winning diocesan newspaper, The Catholic Sun, Tony Gutierrez. Tony, welcome back to the Bishop's Hour.
Thanks for having me, Michael.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
If you've been listening to the Bishop's Hour for a while, you know that every so often Tony comes in and talks about interesting saints or those on the road to sainthood that fit within the month. And I'm glad that you're here doing this because I've always been a fan of Dorothy Day. You know, we think of saints and we think of the stained glass windows and the halos. She was anything but that. She was a tough cookie. She was from Brooklyn. She didn't mince words. She led a life of devotion and confusion and take no prisoners attitudes when she believed in a cause. Tell me about the Dorothy Day that you've discovered.
Well, I've done some research on Dorothy Day, and the reason why we want to talk about her right now is that she died on November 29th, 1980. Typically, when saints become canonized, it is the date of their death that becomes their feast date. So just kind of anticipation that is the anniversary of her death, we wanted to talk about her. She is really quite a remarkable woman. I didn't really know much about her, and it seems that a lot of people have kind of they've kind of taken her and focused a lot on her social justice activism, but she was a deeply, deeply spiritual woman that a lot of times people forget about, and she has an extraordinary life of conversion as well.
Let's go step by step.
Sure.
What you just said about her deep spirituality, I mean, she would really deprive herself and welcome hardships. I mean, like sleeping on the floor. She would do things like that. And I don't know if a lot of people know that about her.
She ran these houses of hospitality. It was really inspired by this truly Christian approach to economics that was kind of based on the encyclicals that were written, Rerum Novarum, by Leo XIII. This idea is that she embraced poverty. And so she opened up these houses of hospitality. And if you go to the Catholic Work website, the Andre House here in our diocese is one of those houses of hospitality. And she lived in them. She didn't have her own home after she established these. She would live in these houses of hospitality. So she was among the people whom she was serving.
Very like Mother Teresa in that respect, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And as a matter of fact, they had a chance to encounter each other and swap stories and encourage each other in their work in their respective nations.
So she was born close to the turn of the century, wasn't she?
She was born in 1897.
Yeah.
She grew up in a nominally religious family, you know, where they're Christian, you know, kind of.
Episcopalian, I think.
Well, actually, no. They were just kind of the time. They're just like, oh, we go to church every now and then. She became Episcopalian because she had a friend from elementary school who was Episcopalian.
Oh.
And her parents said, okay.
Go ahead.
And that was it. Sure, if that makes you happy. And then she dropped out of that. She was involved with a lot of the movements of her day, the women's suffrage movement, a lot of the workers' movements. And, you know, she had a lot of these friends, thinkers of the day, who she'd interact with and hang out at the bars with in New York. She had, and this is all pre-conversion, she actually had an affair with a man and was pregnant, and he pressured her to have an abortion. And she did. She called it as one of the greatest sorrows of her life. Cardinal O'Connor, when he opened the cause initially in 2000, stated that if anything, it's not that the abortion precludes her from being a saint, but if anything, it serves to intensify her cause because she truly experienced that conversion. She recognized what it had happened, this great violence that had happened that she had committed, and she had come to commit to life. As a matter of fact, there's one story that's noted in this book that I'd read, how she was welcomed onto a campus to speak on women's issues. The person who introduced her said that, oh, she's a great supporter of women's right to choose. And she, like, wagged her finger at her, said, no, that is not the case. And when she went up on stage, she corrected her and said, this is what the true reality of abortion is.
Wow.
So this is a woman who, like, she really embraced the teachings of the church in all aspects. She engaged in another affair with another man, and it was from this affair that she got pregnant again, and again was pressured to have an abortion, and she said no.
And she really loved this guy.
Mm-hmm, she did.
That's what I read, that this was really tough for her because she, I guess he just said, listen, it's either that or I'm gone.
And it was. Interestingly enough, he stayed around after the baby was born, and she gave birth to the baby. But she just felt this call to, you know, there's got to be something more to this. And she'd already kind of been studying Catholicism. She felt that God was pursuing her, even though she didn't believe in God. And she encountered a nun while walking on the street in New York and said she felt a desire to have her daughter baptized, even though she herself wasn't Catholic. And, you know, after meeting with this nun and meeting with a pastor, you know, she had her baby baptized and was on the road to converting herself as well. Her objective, she wanted to convert her daughter's father as well. She wanted to bring him into the church so they could be regularized and married in the church. And he wouldn't do it. And so finally she had to decide, you know, am I going to choose God or am I going to choose this relationship? And she chose God.
Yeah. And it was tough for her. I mean, that was a really tough decision from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's saying, what do you mean? What do you mean? And she's in progress to sainthood and everything. But these are the people that Christ reached out to when he was here. Jesus was seeking out those who had sinned. You know, the woman who said, you know, I've been married several times and, you know, I'm living with somebody. And he said, yes, you've been married a lot of times and the man that you are with is not your husband. But he forgave her, you know, and said, just be good, you know, just stop that.
After she converted, she jumped right into it. And as I mentioned before, she was already been involved in, like, the suffrage movement and the workers' movements. And she found the way to tie in these concerns with her faith. She was praying in the chapel at the National Basilica in Washington, D.C., during a workers' march. She was covering it as a journalist. And she prayed for a way that she could tie in her desire to help the poor with her faith. And within days, she was approached about trying to start this movement called the Catholic Worker Movement. She started a newspaper called the Catholic Worker. She had experience as a journalist before and after her conversion. After she converted, she wrote for Catholic publications of the day. And she started this publication, the Catholic Worker, and it really talked about, you know, these issues of subsidiarity and solidarity that we know about in Catholic social teaching, and really promoted these. And which is interesting, too, is that Cardinal O'Connor stated that after reviewing all of her writings, and not only himself, but some canonists and some moral theologians, they discovered that Cardinal O'Connor said that there has been nothing that is untrue written by her after her conversion. Mm. And I think that's very key, you know, that once she converted to the faith, she was full in, and she was, you know, you hear about the idea of this consistent life ethic.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people use that, oh, that's code for, oh, you don't care about abortion. But no, she really was truly consistent to the point where she even challenged the bishops of her day in terms of U.S. involvement in various wars. She was a true pacifist. The way she viewed it is she viewed just war theory as the bare minimum. But to really be an example of Christ, you need to go all the way and say no war whatsoever, even under the just war theory. And so even in light of that, she exemplified this constant desire to grow in Christ, to emulate Christ, and to be Christ to others.
She was arrested a lot, too. I mean, she was arrested for being a suffragist. She was arrested for, or suffragette, I guess that's the term. But she got thrown in jail a couple of times for marching and demonstrating for things, for causes she believed in.
Oh, yeah. She knew she'd get arrested. In the pacifism example that I gave, she was among those protesters, you know, of the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know that we have a lot of listeners who were on various sides of that at the time. But she took a stance, not in the stance that was even against the military per se. Her grandson was in Vietnam, and she prayed for him every day. Mm. So she was never one of those, like, she
it wasn't a political thing.
It wasn't a political thing. No, not at all. It was all about following Christ. And it's important to note that, because her views were about how can we as a nation, how can we as a people be better Christians? And so that came to it with helping the poor, these houses of hospitality, this stance on pacifism, this stance on life. Mm-hmm. All of it came down to how can I be a better follower of Jesus Christ? I've started to develop a devotion to her. I did not know that she was a journalist. Mm. And so knowing that, hey, here's this woman, lay woman, who is a Catholic journalist, you know, it kind of gives me a little bit of inspiration knowing that the work that we do has a cause, has a purpose in evangelizing the world. And that's what she hoped to do. She hoped to evangelize with her publication. It's so great to see that there's this laywoman. Oftentimes when we think of saints, even last time when I spoke, it's so easy to talk about, you know, priests, bishops, nuns. And here's this laywoman, servant of God, Dorothy Day, which is the first step in the process.
Right, servant of God. And she holds that distinction at this point.
That's
right?
Correct.
And so where is it in the canonization process? That is an important step. Now it's the review of documents, isn't it?
Right now it's the review of documents. And at that point, once everything's okayed by the Congregation for the Causes of the Saints, she'll be put forward to be venerable, meaning that she has lived a life of true heroic virtue. And then the investigations into claims of miracles can happen to proceed to her becoming a blessed or a saint. Even now, Pope Francis cited her whenever he came to the U.S. in 2015. When he spoke to the joint session of Congress, he cited four Americans that were personal heroes to him. And Dorothy Day was one of those people he cited, in particular her work for the poor and helping those on the margins, of course, which mm-hmm. Pope Francis is fond of saying.
Right. So at this point, the documents are being reviewed. And she died, what, in 1980, did you say?
That's correct.
Yeah, 1980. And, you know, here we are, what, 30 years later, 30-some years later, almost 40. And so it takes some time.
Oh, that's right. And her cause was formally opened in 2000, which is when she became servant of God. And part of the canonical process is that once the diocese that's overseeing the cause has completed their investigation, they then bring it to the National Bishops' Conference. And the National Bishops' Conference has to vote okay. And that happened in 2012. The U.S. bishops voted to okay that. Mm-hmm. Then it moves to the congregation in Rome. So really, it was a 12-year process in the Archdiocese of New York to analyze the documents at the diocesan level and to have the tribunal investigate, you know, her holiness. And then once that was presented to the USCCB, in Rome, they've been reviewing that for about 6 years. And then once that process is complete in Rome, then they'll move forward to presenting it to the Holy Father. If they give the okay, they'll Sure. present to the Holy Father to declare him to declare her venerable, and then start looking at seeing if praying for her intercession and seeing if there's been any miracles attributed to her intercession.
You know, it's a remarkable story because it's a very modern story. It's, you know, it's a story about getting the vote for women. It's a story about helping the poor in the streets. It's you know, starting these hospitality homes mm-hmm. and all of that. I mean, all of this rings as uniquely American and rings as uniquely saintly somehow.
She was criticized because she had these associations with these communists, American communists, because she was one before her conversion, of course. And after she converted, she kept those friendships. And she was very open in saying, this is where you're wrong, to her friends. But she was criticized for having these friendships. But if you look at our Lord, who is he friends with? The tax collectors, the prostitutes. And in many ways, she was the only light of Christ to these people who otherwise would have a very negative view of Christianity. But here she was, a witness to Christ who was their friend. And she's also an example for us to not only teach Catholics about what it is we believe on Catholic social teaching, but she was also in many ways an evangelist to non-Catholics who bought into the, who already believed in these kinds of things, but like, okay, you already believe in these things like helping the poor, but there's something deeper here. And so she was a witness to both sides of that.
See, that's the thing that makes her this interesting conundrum. You know, how can she be these two people? But they weren't two people. That you can always see the thread of her humanity and spirituality, even before she thought she had a spirituality. But the thread is consistent, and it's there from beginning to end.
It is, yeah. A lot of the information I got was from this book by Terence Wright, Dorothy Day, An Introduction to Her Life and Thought, that was written by this professor at St. John Vianney Seminary, where many of our seminarians go to study. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to learn more about her, I'd encourage them to pick up that book and read it.
Yeah. Terence
Wright.
Terence Wright, yeah. Dorothy Day. Amazon has everything.
It's published by Ignatius Press.
Right there. Yeah, that's right. Published by Ignatius Press. You know, thank you. That was a wonderful exposition of Dorothy Day, and the most complete that I've heard. The more I read about her, the more I sit back and kind of in awe of, how do I want to put this? Her underlying integrity. She always behaved or tried to behave as she believed. And then when she made a mistake, like the abortion, she felt that deeply. She really understood to the depths of what that really had meant, and then used that experience to tell others. But there's this interesting honesty about her, right from the beginning, and her quest for truth and the quest for God, wherever God might be found. And she winds up a Catholic. I mean, it's a great story. It's a great story.
It really is. Like I said, I've developed a devotion to her in my research of her. We can start praying for her intercession right now. Once the cause is open, you can pray for someone's intercession. I will be remembering her, pray for her intercession, especially on the anniversary of her death, November 29th. And I encourage all of our listeners and our readers to learn more about her.
Excellent. Thank you very much for doing this.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Thank
you. Gladly.
Our guest has been Tony Gutierrez, editor of The Catholic Sun, on the progress of Servant of God, Dorothy Day, and her journey to canonization.